नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Chapter 30. I'm going to read 7, 8, and 9. Just a little review for those who were with us yesterday. The title of the chapter is Adverse Fruitive Activities. Description of Adverse Fruitive Activities. This follows two chapters describing devotional service. And this is like what happens if you don't engage in devotional service. It's something like Ishopanishad, where the invocation verse is describing the absolute truth. And the first text is describing how to live one's life in relation to the absolute truth. And the second verse is the benefits, and the third verse is, if you don't, here's the consequences. That's a Shruti text, Sri Ishopanishad. The Bhagavatam is a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, which is a summary of all of the Vedas. So in other words, the same pattern is being followed, just expanded. And so adverse fruitive activities has, you could say, there's the middle, and then it goes further and further, degradation. So go the other direction, it's dharma. Those that are purposefully religious because they don't want bad karma. They don't want entanglement with the reactions to fruitive activities. They want to prosper for in this life and after this life. So it's the intention is fruitive. Dharma that's fruitive based. I want, and so I'll do dharma because I'll get what I want. But then keep going further and further. And the purpose of dharma is to please the personality of Godhead. So similarly, the purpose of life is to please the personality of Godhead, to connect with the personality of Godhead. He's the object, and then keep going, and it's simply devotional service to the personality of Godhead. Keep going, it's unmixed devotional service to the personality of Godhead. And keep going, and it's love of Godhead. Keep going, you're in the spiritual world. Even you may be in this temporal plane with a physical body, if consciousness is way over there, literally, you're in Vaikuntha. So now this chapter is taking a look, if you don't do that, there's consequences. And again, neglect of dharma leads to slackening in dharma leads to an increased tendency for fruitive activity. Not seeing Krishna at the center, seeing my enjoyment and more explicitly, sense gratification as the objective of life. And that leads to further and further irreligion and degradation and misery. So that's the darkness direction, and then there's the light direction. And way over there is like the hellish planets, and way over there is the kingdom of God. So this is just describing a little bit back and forth, meaning, you know, further into sinful activity, and then more just to fruitive activity that's not so heinous and vicious and hurting others and in a wanton way, but it kind of moves back and forth a little bit. But one leads to the other. You add darkness to your life and you get more darkness. And more sinful and more away from the light of Dharma. Two other things, and I'll read the verses. We discussed yesterday, chapter 29, devotional service, speaks about time and how time is eternal and devotional service is eternal. The condition of the natural condition of the soul is already there. Eternal devotional service is eternally there, but covered. And the covering is created by or moved by time, the time of past, present, and future type, not the eternal time. And so time mixes with another one of Krishna's energies, his pradhan, or his external material energy, and that mixing along with the spirit or disposition of living entities to be independent enjoyers creates objects of enjoyment. So the spirit of enjoyment mixed with time creates objects for enjoyment. And then one becomes attached to being the enjoyer of those objects and attached to the objects. That's what this is describing. So once again, the Vedas are teaching us to go to the side of eternal time. The default position, if we don't do that, is past, present, and future time. Time that brings things into being. Time that then destroys those things that we become attached to. And in between, it's misery and then further misery when it's lost. So that's the picture. And it's not like a horror show, it's just reality. It's the nature of neglect of Dharma and neglect of Krishna at the center. Without Krishna at the center, here's the reality of the life of one that doesn't have Krishna at the center. It's not a pretty picture. Starting with text 7. Although he is always burning with anxiety, such a fool always performs all kinds of mischievous activities with a hope, which is never to be fulfilled, in order to maintain his so-called family and society. The previous one is one becomes attached in that forgetfulness position. One becomes attached to the objects that his desire and time have manifested before him in the form of wealth and home and family and relatives and stuff, his possessions and property, and insanely attached to the point where the misery that it brings is seen as happiness. Oh, then this, although he's burning with anxiety, such a fool always performs all kinds of mischievous activities with a hope which is never to be fulfilled. That's the nature of Maya. Happiness in the kingdom of Maya is Maya. It's Maya. There's no happiness. But he thinks it's happiness. Like the classic is searching for water in a desert. If you're in a desert, you want happiness, and happiness in a desert means water, so you search for water. And you see a mirage, a reflection of the sun on the silicon sand, and it looks like water, and you go for the water, but there's no water. You go further and further and further and further into the desert and die. Searching for the happiness of water in a place where there's no water. That's what deserts are by definition. It looks like water. The animals do that literally. The classic example of the Vedic example is a deer searching for water in a desert, seeing the mirage and going for it and dying. But then humans do the same thing, and with that's a metaphor, there's the desert-like condition of material existence, the place of no happiness where one is searching for happiness where it doesn't exist. A desire that's never to be fulfilled. So, in order to make the arrangements, one cleverly or foolishly engages in mischievous activities to fulfill the purpose of connecting the objects of the senses with the senses, maintaining family and home and all of one's plans and visions for making happiness where there's no happiness. Purport. It is said that it's easier to maintain a great empire than to maintain a small family, especially in these days when the influence of Kali Yuga is so strong that everyone is harassed and full of anxieties because of accepting the false presentation of Maya's family. That family we maintain is created by Maya, semicolon. It is the perverted reflection of the family in Krishna Loka. In Krishna Loka, there are also family, friends, society, father and mother, everything is there, but they are eternal. Here, as we change bodies, our family relationships also change. Sometimes we are in a human family, sometimes in a family of demigods, sometimes a family of cats, sometimes a family of dogs. Family, society, and friendship are flickering, so they are called asat. It is said that as long as we are attached to this asat, temporary, non-existing society and family, we are always full of anxieties. The materialists do not know that the family, society, and friendship here in this material world are only shadows, and thus they become attached. Naturally, their hearts are always burning, but in spite of all inconvenience, they still work to maintain such false families because they have no information of the real family association with Krishna. Text 8. Well, I'll mention one thing. Vishwanath Chakra is a Sanskrit term in text 7. Udva Panadina. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur gives a long explanation of that. That word means lots of things. Basically, it's insane attachment to the objects of the senses and trying to maintain the objects of the senses, and he gives a long list of the objects of the senses. Of course, in the consciousness of I'm the doer, I'm the maintainer, I'm going to look after these objects of my attachment, because Krishna is out of the picture. So it's me, it's my hard work, my endeavor, my efforts, my protecting and providing, you know, the activities that are actually in Krishna's domain. Krishna out of the picture, then it's in my domain. And one does these things insanely. Text 8. He gives his heart and senses to a woman. Again, in Vishwanath, his translation, his commentary, he takes it to the sinful side, not just a man and his wife, but an unchaste women, plural. So, you know, goes further that way, the sinful conduct of an attached person, or just an attached person, just husband, wife, family, kind of thing. That's how Prabhupada presents it. So he gives his heart and senses to a woman who falsely charms him with Maya. He enjoys solitary embraces and talking with her, and he is enchanted by the sweet words of the small children. Purport. Family life within the kingdom of the illusory energy, Maya, is just like a prison for the eternal living entity. In prison, a prisoner is shackled by iron chains and iron bars. Similarly, a conditioned soul is shackled by the charming beauty of a woman, by her solitary embraces and talks of so-called love, and by the sweet words of his small children. Thus he forgets his real identity. Paragraph. In this verse, the words Sri Nam Asati Nam indicate that womanly love is just to agitate the mind of a man. Actually, in the material world, there is no love. People certainly have feelings towards one another, but let's hear what he says. Both the woman and the man are interested in their sense gratification. For sense gratification, a woman creates an illusory love, and the man becomes enchanted by such false love and forgets his real duty. When there are children as the result of such a combination, the next attraction is to the sweet words of the children, the love of the woman at home, and the talk of the children make one a secure prisoner, and thus he cannot leave his home. Such a person is termed in Vedic language a Grihamedhi, which means, quote, one whose center of attraction is home, unquote. Grihastha refers to one who lives with family, wife and children, but whose real purpose of living is to develop Krishna consciousness. One is therefore advised to become a grihastha and not a grihamedhi. The grihastha's concern is to get out of the family life created by illusion and enter real family life with Krishna, whereas the grihamedhi's business is to repeatedly chain himself to the so-called family life in one life after another and perpetually remain in the darkness of Maya. Like, this isn't family bashing, it's attached and forgetful of the purpose of life, so-called family. Yeah. Dharma has its purpose for the embodied soul. It's prescriptions for religious activity that progressively lead the soul to liberation or connection with the Supreme Lord, if done properly. So this is describing not properly and the consequences. Text 9. Now this is now moving into the sinful death side over there. The attached householder remains in his family life, which is full of diplomacy and politics, always spreading miseries, and controlled by acts of sense gratification. He acts just to counteract the reactions of all his miseries, and if he can successfully counteract his miseries, he thinks that he is happy. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, the personality of Godhead himself certifies the material world as an impermanent place that is full of miseries. Who knows the Bhagavad Gita verse where Krishna says that? Dukkhaya Shashvatam, yeah. Dukkha, distress, and Ashashvat is impermanent. Place of misery and impermanence. There is no question of happiness in this material world, either individually or in terms of family, society, or country. If something is going on in the name of happiness, that is also illusion. Here in this material world, happiness means successful counteraction of the effects of distress. The material world is so made that. Unless one becomes a clever diplomat, life will be a failure. Not to speak of human society, even the society of lower animals, birds and bees, cleverly managed its bodily demands of eating, sleeping, and mating. Human society competes nationally or individually, and in the attempt to be successful, the entire human society becomes full of diplomacy. We should always remember that in spite of all this diplomacy and all intelligence and the struggle for our existence, everything will end in a second by the supreme will. Therefore, all our attempts to become happy in this material world are simply a delusion offered by Maya. Well, as I said when we were speaking yesterday, this is one of three or four sections that are heavy and, you know, purposefully like shaking us up to the max in terms of affinity for enjoying matter. This section at the end of the fifth canto describing the hellish planets, and the section in the 12th canto describing the end of Kali Yuga, like where the train is going if you stay on it. It's fearful. But as I said yesterday, the purpose is not a scare tactic. It says presenting reality. There are consequences for a godless life. And although we don't like to speak so bluntly, generally, about a godless life, consider, the further one goes from the position of Dharma, the more this precisely resembles materialistic life. Now certainly there are people who don't experience...
Mama!
Certainly there are people that don't experience these factors in an extreme way, and certainly there are people that do. The persons who are more on the dharmic side or pious and acknowledging the presence of God, and then it's less like that. But from the absolute perspective, that which continues one's material existence, even it may appear to be pious, and with that appearance of piety, the appearance of happiness, from the soul perspective, the absolute perspective, there's unavoidable concomitant miseries with having a material body, wherever that material body may be, even in the heavenly realm, or higher grades of sense enjoyment realms, the position of the aristocratic folks that have refined this and that and the other thing, refined sense gratification. There's just, you know, refined diplomacy and other forms of misuse of intelligence to chop at another person that's in the way of, you know, your position or your aspirations. And history is filled with such complications. So the advocacy of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam is don't aspire for any situation in material existence. Bhagavad Gita's verses, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka, Punar Arvartanorjana. From the highest all the way up to Brahma Loka, what to speak of heaven, even beyond heaven, Brahma Loka, it's undesirable. Because therein repeated birth and death take place. So, and with repeated birth and death, there's the tendency to to be attached to the temporary. And then the fear of having that which we're attached to taken from us, which Prabhupada said, it's inevitable. In a moment, it's all gone, all that empire that one has built for one's happiness. And, you know, altruism, the happiness and welfare of others, it's just taken away in a moment. And then one is sad. It's not strongly presented, the negative side is strongly presented, but the positive side of family life, because it's in other sections of the Bhagavatam, but it's specifically to assist one in coming to that position of purification, Krishna-centered life, where this resembles that. And it's knowingly, you know, there's shortcomings here, there's temporality here, there's all these things, diplomacy and attachment here. But the purpose is to get to that, to assist in a religious way, in a focused, purposeful way, to the eternal life in the kingdom of God. And to assist us in achieving that. And if one is focused in that way, then it's useful. Beneficial. Okay. So any comments or questions on this? Yes?
Not in this matter, but a question in general.
You can ask a question.
When we are chanting, can we meditation, should it be like for aspiring for devotional service or wanting to be in a relationship with Krishna?
What does it mean to be in a relationship with Krishna? That's your question?
No. When we are chanting, should we meditate that we want to be in our eternal relationship with Krishna? When we are meditating in that way?
You know? I got about 20% of what you said. We speak up.
Then we are chanting, if I'm meditating, that I want to be in my eternal relationship with Krishna.
If you're meditating, then you want to be in your eternal relationship with Krishna.
Does that fall under pure devotional service or not?
It's the cultivation of pure devotional service. Yeah. Rupa Goswami teaches what? He teaches pure devotional service. Bhakti Uttama. Uttama Bhakti. That's what Rupa Goswami teaches, Uttama Bhakti Thakur. And so, there's stages, Sadhana Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, Prema Bhakti, they're all part of Uttama Bhakti. So if you, or any one of us, are practicing and cultivating and aspiring for being situated in our eternal relationship with Krishna, we're only in the practice stage, it's still part of Uttama Bhakti. Followed properly, following the proper regulations under proper guidance, one will get there. By effort and descending mercy, one will get there.
Okay. You're asking for it, I thought pure devotional service, we're not asking for anything other than service. So here we are trying to...
Supposing one is not on that level, if one can genuinely, sincerely, transparently, No cover-up, have that singular desire, that's fantastic. But supposing one is not on that, you know, honestly speaking, one is not, I only want one thing, when one has wants for other things. So cultivating, recognizing I have wants for Krishna and I have wants for other things, that one can cultivate the stage of pure devotion. Now just take the topic that's here, family life. It's material. However, in one's heart there may be a natural inclination for family life and the happiness, parent happiness that goes along with family life. So, let me take that up, recognizing that's my condition, aspiring for this higher stage, and regulating and acting in a dharmic way on this plane to aspire to help me attain that plane. Because otherwise, this other desire is there and just not acknowledging it, and it'll come out in some other way, some undharmic way. So let me regulate it with dharma, while internally aspiring for this only one thing. Let me come to that stage by proper regulation of the worldly, temporary desires. And you know, you can take that same principle and apply it to whatever. You know, someone's career. You know, so many families have children, and the children are being encouraged, rightly so, by their parents to develop a proper education. And they're thinking, the children may not be thinking, but the parents are thinking, this is so that they'll be able to maintain themselves in their adult life. They need this. That's material. But can that be connected to a position of serving Krishna? Sure. But then the parents have to have that understanding, otherwise they're not going to pass that understanding on to the children. They'll just pass on the material side to the children. Get a good education so you have a good career, so you can have a good life. And that's the, you know, the love of the parents for to their children. We want you to prosper and be happy. That's the love of the parents that don't have the focus on the goal of life and, you know, the message that Srimad Bhagavatam is presenting here. So then one becomes attached and it passes for love. And that's what the parents are feeling, and the children may also be feeling, oh, my parents love me and so forth. Meanwhile, the purpose of life just slipped right through their fingers. And then another birth and death. You know, to keep on the treadmill. So, coming to the stage where in fact there is no other desire takes the proper cultivation for this realistic appraisal of what's inside, what are the desires for experiencing something. Okay?
I was just going to say, it seems like there's so many layers and layers and layers and layers.
We've got a lot of work to do.
Yeah, we hear and we assimilate part of it and then we think, you know, we're acting on it, but then there's more.
During our this past weekend, I was in Houston with the devotees that are doing a Japa retreat, and one of the presenters was Radha Krishna Das Brahmachari, really wonderful devotee, disciple of Tamal Krishna. And we were just having a little discussion on really what it comes down to, like, you know, whether it's improving your japa or whatever it is about devotional service, really comes down to, he was using the language, do you really want to go back to Godhead? Or do you want a comfortable life that's, you know, like, you know, neutralizing and minimizing the miseries? And that can consider that to be happiness and a nice goal. Do you really, so I was saying, you know, different language but same point. Do you really want to be in your relationship with Krishna now and eternally? And that's the light that has to be on, so that the layers and layers, you just keep going through the layers. And, you know, forget things that you learned and then feel, you know, embarrassed that you forgot things that you learned and have to learn them again, learn them again, learn them again. So the operative principle is desiring to be in your, how strong is that? How vibrant is that? That's bhakti. And bhakti can then cut through everything, all those layers. Effort is needed, but bhakti is essential. Without it, you know, it's up and down. Come and go. Temporary. So now you see it, now you don't. What happened? Now I have to go do it again. So it's the mission is to strengthen bhakti. I want to be with Krishna in Krishna's service. I want to be in that relationship with Krishna. Wherever I am, whatever I'm doing. How strong. And all the other things can be assistance to that. Principles. Regulative principles that help one strengthen that, or as it's stated in Nectar of Devotion, all of these, you know, do's and the do nots are always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. That means be attached to Krishna, then you won't forget him and you'll always remember him. Come to the stage of being attached. So the distraction is because we're attached to other things. We go, yeah, I get it. Then we, you know, the attachment to other things covers over. That's, you know, this phrase that we discussed yesterday, avaranavika, covering potency. Just keep getting covered and get uncovered and get covered and get uncovered and get covered again. So we really never uncovered. It was notional.
I've noticed that sometimes when I'm attached to family and friends, before I can try and put Krishna in the center, I've noticed like an impersonal or like a tendency to like negate the relationship or...
Negate the relationships?
Yeah.
Sure. Just, you know, because this is being important. And I'm having some difficulty in relationships with devotees or circumstances. Before my thoughts go to Krishna, and attachment to Krishna goes to some impersonal space. Negate the relationship and distance myself from the relationship. You bet. Those tendencies are long-standing tendencies. They're not from the soul platform, they're just conditioned tendencies, and it's a protection device. You know, the same as what impersonalism is. It says, you know, that I don't like the misery, so I'll just distance myself from it. Yeah, I don't want to attach myself to Krishna either, because that means person. And I found, just exactly as Prabhupada describes, Vitaravalaya Krodha in Bhagavad Gita, I don't want the person, because person means problems. Every time I've had something with person, it's a problem, so I want no person. It's a defense mechanism. A survival mechanism. I don't like pain, so I just like block out the pain by blocking out the object that causes me pain. It's not take shelter of Krishna position, it's take shelter of I don't want the pain position. The person, the relationship, the circumstance, we just black out. A little on the mundane side, but as I was becoming acquainted with Krishna consciousness, a book that I read, I didn't understand what it was about when I read it, but I understood it later. A popular book at the time was a book by Ray Bradbury called One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. You heard of that title? And it's a person that's in prison, Maya, and then the person in charge of the prison is a lady, that's Maya Devi, and then the person in prison, when situations become conflicting, he describes as just kind of this fog starts to appear and he can't see anything and just like zones out. But then, you know, doesn't want to stay zoned out, so he, you know, gets out of the cuckoo's nest. You know, it's you know, getting out of the clutches of Maya. But, you know, unfortunately, Krishna's not in the story. It's just, there's a jailbreak or something. Forget how it ends. But, it's common. So let's say in the very beginning, aside from, you know, what you described, if someone is starting Krishna consciousness, one of the first things that they do is they have, you know, they can't see continuing with their education, they can't see continuing with their career, they can't see continuing with anything because it's, they want to distance themselves from Maya rather than take shelter of Krishna. It's just, it's impersonalism. And it's artificial. It's immature. But it's natural because they want to distance themselves. So they call, you know, all kinds of, you know, carnies, all that, and Maya Davies, and all that kind of pejorative language. Just like, you know, putting a fence around a little tree so the little tree can grow. It's, you know, horticulturists do that, and new devotees do that too. Just like distance themselves from anything that gives me pain. Rather than, you know, see the soul within and what Krishna's desire and how can it be of service and all those other things that one would become more mature in Krishna consciousness, one can think. But in those stages, one can't think those in those ways. It says, pull back. So, recognizing that you do that, that's the first step of then, you know, considering, do I have to do that? Are there other choices? And I don't want to be miserable, but I do want it to be Krishna conscious, and that's what being happy is the permanent position of happiness is being Krishna conscious. So there's probably some other choices I could be making. And then, you know, with trust in Krishna, make some of those other choices and see if you feel the Krishna connection. Anyway. And then you can, in a sustainable way, make other choices besides zoning out.
Ramaraj, I was wondering, with regards to asat or attachment to the temporary.
With regards to which?
Attachment to the temporary.
Acting towards the temporary?
Attachment to the temporary, okay. Sometimes I find that, I mean, there are a lot of things that, well, personally I'm attached to which are temporary, but in a lot of times what happens is that you get attached before you even realize it. So how do you...
Oh, yeah.
How do you...
Yeah,
it's already
really
done.
Bad.
And then... So
you
how
get attached to your shoes. You get attached to, you know, all kinds of things.
So how do we stop that? Because it's already done before you even recognize it.
Well, so just for the recording purpose, finding oneself getting so easily attached, I'm attached before I even know I'm attached, and then I'm attached to temporary things, which speak of long-standing temporary things. Some things last longer than your pair of shoes. You know, like family members and relationships of when I was going to school and, you know, people that, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Some things are more long-standing. Some things are shorter. But the tendency to get attached to those. So your question is what to do about that? What's the preventative measure? Yes. Well, recognizing that just like a visual image is, now they don't have so many yellow flashing lights, but that used to be a common thing. So there's the red light that says stop, there's a green light that says go, and there's the yellow flashing light that says proceed slowly, with careful. So that's the yellow flashing light signal. Knowing that you have such a tendency, then, you know, you're on, not red alert, but you're on amber alert, or yellow alert, or you proceed cautiously. And then when you notice, there it is, you're anticipating the tendency for something. You know, as I'm passing through the intersection, there may be the tendency of a car that should have stopped at the light, kept going, so it's like defensive driving. You proceed cautiously, knowing that anything could happen at any time. And sometimes it doesn't, sometimes it does. So if you're prepared, you can respond properly. So even when you're prepared, there's knowledge and you're conscious, still will happen. So that's like caution, but still it happens. Still the car, sometimes cars come and just slam into the, whatever they call that, sideswipe car. So the long-term solution is become attached to Krishna. That's the Krishna conscious solution to the worldly problem. And when you're attached to Krishna, then whatever residual tendency may be even lingering to become attached to temporary, it diminishes, it disappears. And then you can even see the temporary as temporary and engage with it. That's a nice verb. Engage with it. It's similar to engage with the subject matter of the Bhagavatam. It's not just hear it, think about it, and then, you know, then it in one ear, out the other ear. You've heard it, you contemplated it, and then life goes on and just like evaporates. But engage with it is you're interactive with the subject matter, probing, trying to understand, probing, trying to apply it, discussing with others, and then it becomes like assimilated within your system, like food. Gandharvika, shh. Assimilating food, then it becomes digestive, and it becomes, you know, something that gives you strength. And people that don't have strong assimilation, they become anemic. So rather than being the anemic person, we can be engaging with the activities of bhakti in an interactive way. It's like chanting. There's chanting, it's mechanical, and there's chanting where you're at least striving to and eventually becoming interactive with Krishna in the form of his holy name or worship of the deity, just like your deity at home. There's the procedure and then there's the relationship. Then you're interactive. And then that affinity for the temporary diminishes. That's the feature of darkness. And when there's light, darkness is dispelled. So things then are seen as the potential of being engaged in service to Krishna. And otherwise, you know, the interest fades and the attachment fades, the tendency for attachment fades. It doesn't like happen, you know, poof, it happens gradually. Proportionate to our attachment for Krishna. Detachment, fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, what is called detachment is the same as, what is called renunciation is the same as attachment for Krishna, because you won't be renounced without attachment to Krishna. So the goal of karma yoga actually is to become attached to Krishna. The goal of life is to become attached to Krishna, and the diminishing of the tendency to be attached to the temporary is attachment to the permanent, attachment to Krishna, and a loving relationship with Krishna. So that's our lifelong project. Meanwhile, we're kind of in this yellow flashing light zone. There's tendency to become attached to the temporary. And it happens real fast, happens before you even know it. On all kinds of levels, like you're saying, layers and layers and layers. And so it's not just a matter of becoming renounced. There's this very beautiful section in the life of Ramanujacharya without all the details, but there's this household couple that Ramanujacharya had great appreciation for. And the renunciates were feeling neglected because Ramanujacharya had such affection for this glamorous household couple. So he then, some devotees came and said, you know, the sannyasis are disturbed. So he said, I'll teach you why I have this appreciation. He gave him two assignments. At night, when the sannyasis are asleep, go and move this one's dhoti over to that place, and that one's dhoti over to that place, and that one's dhoti over to that place, and watch what happens when they wake up in the morning. They were furious. Who's taking my dhoti? Okay. Then, now go to the home of this couple. You saw that one. Now, at night, tell the husband that I'd like to see him. And when he comes to see me, his wife will take rest, and then go and steal her jewelry and see what happens. So they stole her jewelry, and she saw these sadhu or renunciates coming into her place, and they stole her jewelry, and so she turned over the other side so they could steal from the other side. And then when her husband came home, she said what had happened, and he chastised her, why did you do that? You could have just given them the other jewelry, but you turned over and they ran. He said, well, you know, I wanted to give them that jewelry from that side too, because they're poor fellows. So that was reported back to Ramanuja. Now you see why. Because they're attached to simply serving the devotees. They're not attached to the position of their so-called possessions. Attached to serving the devotee lovingly. That's why they're dear to me. So it's not the position of becoming a renunciate or that kind of detachment. According to suitability, one position, seeing all things in terms of service to Krishna and Krishna's devotees. That bhakti. Therein lies the power of detachment from the temporary, or not being attached to temporary. We utilize things carefully that are given to us by Krishna, or arrangement that are the facilities for us to use in Krishna's service, because it's for Krishna's service. We're attached in that way, not in the proprietary sense of attachment. The life of Krishna consciousness in this temporary world. I'm going to end there. Thank you very much. Prabhupada Kijana.